Great. Ooh. Welcome into the April 11th edition of Impact Sports Daily. I am your host, Jack David, alongside my co-host, Matt Corey. How are you doing today, Matt Corey?
I'm doing well. There's a lot to unpack today.
I'm looking at the show sheet. There's a lot to talk about. So, yeah, should we just get right into it?
Yep.
Get right into it. All right, so we'll start with some men's college basketball. Their season wrapped up on Monday. UConn taking down Purdue pretty easily. They're now on a stretch of, I believe, 12 tournament games where they've won over, like, 13 points, I believe is the number. So they just an absolute all-time display of dominance from this UConn team. And, yeah, do you have any more comments on this game, really? I mean, it was kind of close in the first half, and the second half UConn just pulled away. They have so many players that contributed at a high level on Monday. I mean,
at this point, just looking back on it, it's like, where does this team rank among all-time great college basketball
teams? And they're up there.
I think they're high up there. Has there ever been a run like this where they've just dominated everyone in their path for 2 years in a row, pretty much?
I mean, it's been 15 years since someone went back-to-back, and that was Florida in 2006 and 2007, but I don't remember them being as dominant in terms of, like, every single game. These games, I mean, maybe they're close, but the final score is not an indicator of them really being that close. So, you know, got to give props to Dan Hurley, Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, Caravan, Svon Castle, Klingon. I mean, what a year. Nearly as perfect of a year as you can honestly have. What, they finished with like three losses, something like that. On to the other side, Purdue. I mean, what a performance by Zach Edey. I want to quickly talk about this. I think the notion that Zach Edey is a fraud because he's just, you know, a 7-4 merchant, I think, especially in these last couple tournament games, he's really has shut that up. Like, do you agree with that? Like, some people don't think he's that good of a player just because he's tall, but
I mean, I agree. It's just kind of, at this point, it's just kind of used as a punching bag now for any team that loses to him. Well, they have a guy that's 7-4. That's why we lost.
Yeah, we brought
foul
this.
Foul merchant that. He lives at the foul line, which in some games he did, to be fair. But they got to the championship game with, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things where it's like, he got all the way to the championship game and was hanging with this dominant UConn team, and UConn did kind of exactly what I think they wanted to do. Yes, Edey had a good game, but they were really at times trying to force him to make, you know, some of the guards make plays, and they were not making plays.
Oh, yeah, no. Besides Zach Edey, he had 37 of their 60 total points.
I don't think Fletcher Lawyer made a shot.
Fletcher Lawyer did not make a shot. He attempted 5, minus 16 plus minus. So there you go, Fletcher. Besides that, I mean, Braden Smith had 12. Lance Jonas had 2.
Yeah, the game was Zach Edey, and you lock down every other aspect of the game except for the center, you're going to get good results. I mean, because you're not going to be able to stop Edey. And nobody could. They couldn't even do it.
He had 37 points. 37. Like, ridiculous number. That's 37 on 25 shots. Donovan Klingon did his best to try to contain him. But no one can contain someone that's 7-4. Yeah,
They did exactly what the game plan was. The halftime adjustments that were made were phenomenal, as always, UConn.
Shout out Dan Hurley.
But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all that has to be said. I mean, UConn was just the more well-rounded team from the start.
They've been the most well-rounded team the entire year. So, this final score is not really surprising. I mean, some people thought it could be close. I think, again, if Zach Edey could have just gotten help, which is, he's gotten help the entire year in terms of, like, the other players on the team, you know, playing well, but not in this game. So, before we hop over to women's college basketball. I want to quickly talk about John Calipari taking the Arkansas job.
It was
very surprising. And I don't know if you saw the clips from his introductory press conference. Very weird. Very weird. It had very weird vibes in the room. One of their biggest boosters, like, got a standing ovation in the middle of the press conference. It was Arkansas only has, like, one player on roster right now, I believe. Very weird. This whole kind of situation is very weird. I'm not surprised he's not in Kentucky anymore because it just really hasn't worked out. But, yeah, what are your thoughts about that?
I feel like it's a good thing for him, I guess, from a coach trying to prove himself back type of standpoint, because he said he went in to see his team and there was no team. Mm-hmm. There is actually no team at Arkansas, like, pretty much right now. And I think that booster getting that standing ovation is the fans and stuff's way of saying, let's do this. Let's get the ball rolling here.
Yeah.
Because they have to. And it was kind of odd. Yeah, one player on roster right now.
Shout out Lawson Blake, forward from Fayetteville, Arkansas. The only player currently on the Arkansas basketball roster. That's a player that, you know, I was thinking, I saw this clip and I was thinking about this earlier. If he turns out to be good, what a story that is.
Yeah.
So, but, hey, like, I was with you through thick and thin, but anyways.
You know, if you're, talk about a fresh start for a coach, I mean, doesn't get any fresher than that. You get one player and you have to build your own team.
The entire slate is clean. You could do whatever you want to build the team. It's going to be really interesting to see how that team looks.
So that, you know, that standing ovation was probably because they need those NIL things a lot to happen for this team to get.
All colleges need it, so.
I mean, especially a team with one rostered player.
Yeah.
But I think that he can probably bring them back in a few years to be a decent team. Kentucky, I have no clue what's going to happen over there.
No, I was going to ask.
There's nothing going. There's no movement, really.
It was looking like it was going to be Scott Drew, but Scott Drew's going to stay in Baylor. A name that's also been floated around is Dan Hurley, but that makes absolutely no sense to me, because why would you want to leave?
He laughed at that when they brought it up.
And that's how he should react, because that team's coming off back-to-back championship games. They are, you can say, the best college basketball team in the last 25 years. Based on national championships, they are, because they have the most. But it's not going to be Dan Hurley. So besides that, I don't really know. I know Billy Donovan's been floated around, and that would make sense if he's ready to come back to college. But it really could be anyone, so Kentucky's going to be really interesting next year. Arkansas as well. Obviously, this was nothing that anyone was expecting, so it's really going to spice up next year.
And who'd have thought that Oakland would have broke Kentucky basketball?
Jack Olke is the last sight John Calipari ever saw as a Kentucky head coach. That's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. But anyway, that's gonna do it for college hoops. So we'll head over to, honestly, the more interesting and the more fun college basketball. We'll talk about women's hoops now. Their national title game also wrapped up last Sunday. South Carolina took care of business again. Was closer earlier in the game, and not honestly that close in terms of, it was flipped in the opposite way. Iowa had a really hot start. Kaylin Clark had a hot start. She had 8 points in the first quarter. But then besides that, Dawn Staley and crew got the adjustments made and kind of just really took care of business. Another really, really good basketball team. I mean, I wouldn't compare them to UConn because, you know, they've only won one title. But really good team led by Camila Cardoso and other players like that. But something that we both want to talk about, because I think we both agree that it makes us not happy to see older players trying to, I mean, what's the good word? What's a good word for this?
I'd say discredit.
Yeah, discredit everything that Kaitlin Clark has done. Old players meaning Lynette Woodard, who I believe that's her name, Lynette Woodard, who initially held the points record for women's, broken by Caitlin Clark. And then Diana Taurasi on the Diana Taurasi and like Sue Bird, like a simulcast type thing. It was like kind of like a Manning Brothers thing they were doing for the national title game. She also discredited Caitlin Clark's greatness. Just basically saying like, this isn't going to be in the same in the WNBA because you're playing with grown women. But Matt, you could start with this. I don't understand why these older players are getting so up in arms about this. It's beyond me.
The only aspect of it I really kind of understand is the idea that her game might not translate to the WNBA yet. That's the only argument that I can kind of see, because that's the case with a lot of young stars. I mean, you go into because it is a different league. It's professional basketball. You go from college. Sometimes that jump isn't always perfect. But in that setting where she's playing, and because I think this was said during the Final Four game, I'm pretty sure.
From Diana Taurasi.
Yeah, about how her game wouldn't translate over.
It was one of the simulcasts that they did for.
But yeah, regardless, to say that during that game, while she's playing for, you know, either a spot or the national title and just going off, seemed like a little shade. And also the immediate, I mean, part of it is, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like kind of a, I don't know if you've ever heard of like the crabs in a bucket analogy. It's pretty much, so.
Explain.
It's kind of a weird one, but it does make sense. So pretty much you put like, if you put crabs in like a bucket or a hole or something like that.
Yeah.
They're all going to try to crawl out. And when other crabs are starting to kind of get towards the top, I guess instinctually the other crabs pull them back down.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it's like, it's kind of,
it's kind of like
similar
that.
Because they're trying to, it seems like, pull her back down in regards to her success and what she's doing for the game. And it feels like they're trying to discredit it because they didn't get that type of treatment, maybe.
I mean, neither of us are old enough to remember college basketball and the WNBA when either player, or really any of these older players, played. So it's hard to compare, but I think it's pretty easy to say, and again, this goes back to, it just bewilders me that they are, you know, trying to discredit Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark has brought women's college basketball to a place that it's never been, and she's going to bring the WNBA to a place that it's never been in terms of viewers. There was nearly 20 million people that tuned in to watch the South Carolina-Iowa game.
More people tuned into that than the men's final.
Yeah, all because of this amazing star that wears 22 for Iowa. Like, I don't understand all. It's a good thing. This is an amazing thing for college basketball, for women's college basketball, women's basketball in general. This is what they needed to, you know, after, you know, not great ratings and whatever, they have a player like this that they can, you know, spearhead the sport to go forward and to move on and get bigger. And the older players just don't like it. So I don't know.
It's very odd because you'd think that a league like that, that has had its, you know, its fair share of getting put down by everyone and slandered and disrespected, and then you finally get a player that has a lot of eyes on him. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Caitlin Clark either. There's a lot of other, it's like this draft class is going to be very good. There's a lot of stars on a lot of different teams right now, and eyes are going to be on the WNBA next year when, like, your Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese and stuff like that are translating over to the WNBA.
Yeah, when you go to StubHub and you look for WNBA, like, ticket prices, and you compare any game that the Indiana Fever is going to be in to any other WNBA game, it's like 5 to 10 times more expensive. And that just, again, goes to show what Caitlin Clark is doing for the sport. And like you mentioned, it's not just Caitlin Clark. You have Cameron Brink, who's going to be a top three pick. You have Haley Van Lith, who's going back to college, but I think can really be a star of the sport if she goes to the right situation. Angel Reese, obviously a star in her own right. And player after player, Paige Beckers. I forget about Paige Beckers. Paige Beckers is kind of Caitlin Clark-esque in terms of her scoring. Like, there is a lot of star power, more star power than men's right now in women's college basketball. And they're in a great spot. And again, don't understand why the older players are against it. I guess they're jealous, if I had to guess.
I mean, for the top player to be, you know, playing in the national championship game and you talk about them and all you have to say is, I don't think their game's going to transfer against, like, seasoned veterans and the WNBA. It's not going to translate well. You can say that in a different context, I think, in a much better way.
Mm-hmm.
And I would kind of be like, you know, okay, I guess. We'll see. Because you don't know.
Yeah, I suppose, but...
But that context was bad, and saying that she doesn't have the record because there wasn't a three-point line, but she wasn't... I don't know. It's frustrating to see because they're just kind of tearing themselves down, like, while doing it.
There's no point to be saying these things at all. So, I don't know. Again, I guess that's, you know, you can spin it into another, you know, way to look at Caitlin Clark's greatness and that the older players don't like it. It's beyond me. I couldn't tell you what's going through some of these older players' minds when they're trying to tear her down. But
that was kind of another thing that I was thinking of is you see this and then you kind of, like, I kind of took a step back for a minute and looked at, like, the NBA and how much parity there is in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And how there's never been something like this for the WNBA for the most part, I feel like. There's never been a player that some people are like, oh, she's not going to be great. She's going to be great. You know, it's like a kind of like a LeBron James type of conversation where it's like.
Well, I think we're talking about a LeBron James type of player in the context of women's basketball. So, yeah, like I'm just trying to think of like the really, you know, highly sought after, like, first overall picks in the past couple of years for the WNBA. Like Sabrina Ionescu from Oregon, she never got this. Brittany Griner, when she came out of Baylor, she never got this. So I don't know. It's going to be really fun to watch the WNBA next year. It's going to still be fun to watch women's college basketball. So I think my closing statements with this segment is I'm just happy that women's basketball is in the state that they're in right now. It's like the best state that they've ever been in. So that's, you know, and again, shout out Caitlin Clark, but. Moving on to some MLB, we'll talk about the Tigers. After a very hot start, they've kind of trickled off here a little bit with their series against the Pirates. Didn't go very well. Pirates might be better than some people think, at least in terms of their start. They've had a pretty good start. But currently the Tigers are 7-4, third in the AL Central. What are some of your takeaways from this team so far?
It's still kind of early, but you can definitely see some of the glaring issues with this team. I mean, the pitching has been okay. They have some good pitchers, and then they have some that have not been so great. I mean, Maeda hasn't had a great start. Flaherty left some to be desired. Yeah.
Scooble's been great. Mize in his, two... outings.
Yeah, I'm gonna give Mize time though.
Yeah, sure, he's coming up.
They look okay. I mean, I've seen better, I've seen worse, and it's all been within the first few games this season. They've looked really good at times, and other times they've looked really not so good. One thing I do have kind of a gripe with is the way that AJ Hinch manages the pitching sometimes. It's always bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he gets it right, but like the other day I was watching the game against game one of the Pirates t- Tigers series. They lost 7-4. So I believe it was Reese Olson was the starting pitcher.
That sounds right.
And he was, for lack of a better word, he was getting shelled. I mean, the first inning he did all right. Second inning he gave up 3 runs, and it's like, okay, you know, maybe give him a leash because you're coming off that doubleheader from the rainout against the Mets. Your bullpen's probably a little scarce. And then the third inning he gives up 2 more runs, and he just was not coming out of the game. It was he didn't come out until the fourth. He gave up 5 runs. Like I said, 3 was okay. 4, it's like, okay, let's get things going and here. And then he loads up the bases pretty much. He hit a batter, walked another batter. He's still in the game. And, you know, that's when he gave up the other 2 to put him at 5-1. And then he got taken out of the game. And he, 6 earned runs by him, you know. We lost 7-4. It was a game that we probably, I think, could have won if we worked the bullpen a little bit better. I mean, I was, because, again, they were tired, but what was the difference between taking them out 2 batters beforehand? You know, it's not that big of a difference. The arms are going to be tired regardless if you take them out before he walks 2 straight batters or after he walks 2 straight batters. You've seen, I don't know, I've seen things like this before in the past with him where he just leaves his pitchers in for way too long, and it bothers me, and I hope that that changes because I hope some of these pitchers kind of find their groove.
Yeah, and back to the Reese Olson thing, like, and, you know, A.J. Hinch maybe having a questionable, you know, leash when it comes to his pitchers. Like, if you give up 5 runs for the Tigers offense,
right? And that's, they like scored 10. 4. That's so, like, they could have won, like, close. I said, but
yeah, I don't know. This Tigers team, it's, again, it's still really too early to call to understand how they are. I mean, the Astros are last in the AL West, so it's early in the season, things will change, but. Yeah, my big takeaway is just the hitting has to be better. The hitting has to be better. The highest amount of runs that they've had was the second game of the season where they had 7. Besides that, they're at like 4 a game, which is below average, you would probably say. But yeah, I think both sides just have to get better, that being hitting and pitching. But again, super early on, things can change. But before we get away from the MLB, we also want to talk about the just overload of pitcher injuries that have happened recently. It's very weird, but I think there's a couple of reasons that you can attribute to why this is happening. I think the one of the biggest is probably the pitch clock, in that these guys are throwing and using their arms more regularly than they would have before the pitch clock. But yes, it's definitely an issue. And do you have any possible solutions for what the MLB can implement to try to, you know, stop that?
I am not sure, because I do think that part of it is the pitch clock. Another part of it is kind of the other aspect where they're throwing much harder than they have in the past.
Yes.
It's really kind of a weird gray area right now, it seems. But a lot of pitchers are getting hurt recently, and it's everybody's kind of pointing the finger. I know Garrett Cole was one that was, a couple days ago, he was going at it about the pitch clock with the MLBPA. And it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, this did start happening after they implemented that into the game, and arms do get tired after a while. I mean, I can't really say much, but I pitched in high school, and I know that that'll take a toll on your arm after throwing for a long time. And as hard as you possibly can, and then to add a pitch clock where you're kind of rushed into your next throw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like it does play a big factor in it, but it also is really helping the pace of the game. Not that, I mean, it's a tough situation.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can't, because then what happens if you take the pitch clock away, which they won't. If you take that away and then players are still getting hurt because of how they're throwing,
mm-hmm.
then what? And I don't know.
I mean, I think another solution, too, is you could expand the roster. You could just have more pitchers to pitch. But, again, I don't know if that would really fix the problem either. There's no real – I mean, this is what you find with a lot of issues. There's no real correct answer. But it's definitely an issue that I think the MLB has to fix and leave it up to – what's his name?
I do not know who you're thinking about.
The commissioner. Manfred.
Oh, yeah.
It's up to Manfred to try to figure that out. So we are in... Are we in good hands there?
I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I've seen some people talk about them liking what Manfred's done for the sport, but...
It is more watchable from a TV standpoint.
Yes.
Which is what he was trying to do.
Really, yeah. That was crucial.
Is that a good thing or not? Maybe not. But
we can have that conversation another day.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's going to do it for us for the Tigers and the MLB. On to the Red Wings. Matt, tell me about the Red Wings. How are they doing?
That's all I have to say is they dropped a crucial game against the Capitals on Tuesday. They have another crucial game today at Pittsburgh. Things are looking a little bleak for them right now, not going to lie.
Yeah.
That wild card spot right now, they are behind the Penguins and the Capitals, separated by a point. So it is that game. They really needed that game the other day to at least go to overtime to get 1 point to stay, you know. But regardless, they play a big game against Pittsburgh tonight. It is absolutely a must win. The other game felt like a must win, but now this is actually a must win.
If they lose this game.
Because then you have the Maple Leafs at Toronto. Canadians, which then you play the Canadians twice, which are both winnable games, but at that point, they could be out of, you know,
the playoffs by then.
So, with that said, I think that they did improve this season regardless of how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think they obviously still have a lot to build on, a lot more depth, a lot more goalie development, especially. Defense has been pretty bad. The offense goes cold for some time. I mean, I don't know. They left a lot to be desired, but at the same time, it was promising at points. So I think next year is going to be a lot more interesting than this year, even if they are to make the playoffs somehow. But really, that's about it. I mean, they technically didn't get shut out, but pretty much did get shut out in the sense that they scored their only goal against the Capitals with 1.1 seconds left in the game, which just doesn't matter at all. Also, that goal could have been a lot more important if they did make the call earlier in the game, which I thought was pretty interesting. I don't know if you saw anything about this. I believe it was Andrew Kopp got a stick to the face, broke his cheekbone.
Oh, no.
Didn't get called for high sticking, though. No penalty on the play, no power play, and not saying that they would have scored on the power play, not going to point the finger there, but that was just an egregious no call. I mean, he broke his cheekbone. He was on the ground. You can review that and look and see if it's a penalty or not. Obviously, his stick was at his face. And, but no call to be seen, and the result is what it is now. So pretty much today is might be a do or die for them, but we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we will see. It would be, again, like you said, it's regardless of the way the season ends, this was a, you know, I get, can you say a success of a year?
I mean, yeah, and it was successful in the regards that, you know, like ladder growth, they looked better than they did last year, but in the sense that they were very, like, snugly in a playoff spot a little over a month ago, and then they dropped so many games in a row, and now they're losing more than they're winning, and it all just kind of went away because they were very securely in that first playoff spot, and it felt like they were going to get that, at least one of them, the way that they were playing. And so in that regard, it's disappointing, but I feel like even if they were to make the playoffs this year anyway, they wouldn't have, probably won't win round one unless they get really hot. But yeah, I'd say it was for the most part a success, but it was still disappointing, like I said.
Yeah, for sure. But so yeah, that's going to do it for the NHL. We'll head over to the NBA now. Not a whole lot going in the NBA last night. I mean, one main final score sticks out to me, and the Nuggets played the Timberwolves last night. The Nuggets won by 9 at home, and that all but not locked up the Western Conference for the Nuggets. So yeah, there are only about 4 days left until the end of the regular season. The regular season ends this Sunday, April 14th, and then the I'm not sure exactly when the playoffs start after that, but it should be in about a week the playoffs will get rolling. So yeah, that's going to be super exciting. We'll touch on that probably more next week. Moving on from that, another thing that is just tipping off, or I guess hitting off, putting off, I don't know, the Masters starts today. Not a whole lot going on so far. Only about like 30 out of the like 75, 80 golfers at the Masters have started so far. A handful of people, 5 people are tied at 300 right now. That includes Bryson DeChambeau, but yeah, pretty early. Nothing that you could really take away so far. Some of the favorites for sure is going to be Scottie Scheffler. He is, I believe, the biggest favorite since Tiger. I believe the number's plus 340. But yeah, besides that, there's a lot of guys that being in contention. What a story it would be if Tiger can win again, 5 years after 5 years after winning last time. But yeah, besides that, not a real whole lot going on, but it's going to be fun. Gonna, you know, probably be watching that the entire weekend. Going up, and then now moving on to an important, a more important golf tournament.
The real golf tournament.
The real golf tournament. Something called the Spasters. That's me and Matt, who took place in this, who took part in the Spasters. We can try to explain what this is. So imagine Augusta, but just like more pristine and better in every single way. That was the golf course that we were playing on. It was basically putt putt, but just longer. I think the longest was like 250 feet, like a par 4. But yeah, so we took a part of that. We're both a part of the Sports Perspectives group here on campus, and that was a part of that group, and it was pretty fun. I finished 12 over. You finished, do you remember?
I stopped keeping track.
You stopped keeping track. Probably around 15 over, if I had to guess, because you weren't that far behind me. We were brought, you know, going blow for blow there. But yeah, so that was, you know, that's the golf tournament that, you know, the Masters, the people really care about.
And I've never seen a mini golf. It wasn't even a mini golf course. It was just pretty much like a putting course.
Yeah.
It was like very professional, very well kept, no like obstacles and stuff that you'd think of from like a regular mini golf, like a, you have to shoot it under an elephant or like a, you know, a windmill and stuff like that. It was not like that at all. It looked like a real golf course, just if it you put it in the dryer.
Yeah. that's actually a really good way to put it. Yeah, so just take a big golf course and then just shrink it, like, down a lot.
But it was a cool experience, though. I mean,
yeah, it was cool.
Our group was probably the worst group to ever set foot on that course.
Yeah, we had a group of about 20, so everyone split into groups, and there was four groups, and we were the last group. We were four holes behind everyone the entire time. I don't know if because just collectively we just sucked, probably. But, yeah, it was a great time. Really fun. Well, maybe we'll do it next year. It depends on who the president is next year if he wants to do it. But
that would be interesting. I would be practicing every day.
Yeah. I think you agree with me. We should do actual golf.
Absolutely.
Like go to an actual course and, you know, do even worse. I can't imagine how some of those guys would do in a real golf course, including me, because I've never really golfed like that before. Anyways, we're going to end the show on this. We have to bring it up because this happened hours ago.
Breaking news, yeah, pretty much.
This is breaking news. This really puts the daily into Impact Sports Daily. But O.J. Simpson has passed.
Yeah, so O.J. Simpson passed away earlier today due to
cancer
complications. And
it's not funny.
Definitely one of the most... I don't even know what word to use to just kind of a polarizing figure in sports to say.
Yeah, we're not going to comment on anything else besides the fact that he died. That's the only thing we're going to comment on because you can't with O.J. Simpson.
But yeah, it's definitely big news for today. I mean, it's the biggest news that's dropped in probably a while. He's definitely one of the most talked about figures in all of sports history, I'd say.
Yeah,
because of
the things that have happened, may or may not have done. But yeah, so former USC Trojan Buffalo Bill passed away from cancer, and I think that's how we're going to end the show today. That's all that we have. We had to bring it in. Had to bring it up. It would be weird if we didn't, because it is, you know, honestly, probably the biggest piece of news, not just even sports news, just the biggest piece of news that's going to happen today. So had to bring it up, but. Anyways, that's going to do it for Matt and I on this April 11th edition of Impact Sports Daily. Hope everyone here has a good rest of your day, and we will see you next week, which will be the last episode of the semester, because next week is the last regular week, and then the week after that is finals week, so we won't be then. But we will be back next week wrapping up this semester of Impact Sports Daily. So, again, for Matt and I, thank you for listening. Hope you guys have a good rest of your day.
See you.